Welcome to Torah Timecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Shaiwitz, and today we'll be studying Zechariah, Perek Vav, Chapter 6. Chapter 6 is a very complicated one. I hope I will do it justice. So to give you a sense of what we're going to do, there are two parts of Perek Vav. The first part of Perek Vav is the last of Zechariah's night visions. And we know these have been very esoteric, difficult to understand. So we'll do that one first. And then the second half of the Perek is also symbolic, but it's a symbolic act that Zechariah takes part in. Okay, so here's where we begin. We'll start with Pasuk Aleph. Va'ashuv. So Zechariah says, again, I returned, ve'asa enai, raised my eyes, ve'er'eh, ve'hinei arba markavot yotzot, mibein shnei harim, ve'heharim harei nechoshet. So lifts his eyes again, sees another symbolic vision. This time there are four chariots going out, and they're going out from between two copper mountains. Ba'mirkava rishona, this is Pasuk Bet, in the first chariot, susim adumim, there are red horses. B'mirkava sheni tzusim shchorim. And in the second chariot, there were black horses. Pasuk Gimel. U'b'mirkava shlishit. In the third chariot, tzusim levanim. There were white horses. B'mirkava harivii tzusim brudim amutzim. It's a little bit of a debate about what that fourth group of horses looked like. We'll go with the idea that they were somehow spotted. So as always, and this is typical, again, of Zechariah's visions, which are very unclear, Pasuk Dalid, he doesn't really get better at them. Va'an, and I answered, Va'omar, I said, Al HaMalach HaDoverbi. So again, he turns to his trusty friend, the Malach, the angel that's speaking to him, and he says, Ma Ela Adoni, what are these, my master? Pasuk Hey, Va'yan HaMalach, Va'yomer Elai. So the Malach answered me, Ela arba ruchot hashamayim yotzot mehitiyatsev al adon kol haaretz. So he said, these chariots that you're seeing are the four kind of like the winds of heaven, and they're coming out from standing in front of Hashem, master of the world. The Malach then explains that two of the chariots are going to the north, one is going to the south, and then the fourth one ends up spreading out and going in all different directions. Okay, again, a very difficult vision to explain. Zechariah, of course, is struggling with it, and he needs the Malach to explain it to him. So we're also struggling. What are these four chariots that are going out and going in all different directions? So in order to understand this vision, we have to go back to the very first vision that we saw in Perek Aleph. This was the second half of Perek Aleph of chapter 1, and it was Zechariah's first one of these esoteric night visions. Now, in that vision, if you'll remember, Zechariah saw colored horses going out to roam the world. They went out to roam the world, and they came back, and then they reported that the world is sitting quietly, the world is tranquil. Now, this made the Malach who accompanies Zechariah, this Malach who Zechariah is always conversing with, this made him very upset. And he actually turned to Hashem and said, Ad mataya ta lo terachim et Yushalayim et arei Yudah asher za'amta zeh shivim shana. Right? Until when are you not going to have mercy on Yushalayim and on the cities of Judah that you've been angry at them already 70 years? Right? Again, the allusion to this idea that the 70 years that Yirmiyahu spoke about, it's over. It's time for Nachamu Nachamu. It's time to have mercy on the people. And the Malach's complaint is that even though the Jewish people have returned to Jerusalem, right, since Cyrus's decree, they've lost power, they've lost sovereignty, and they suffered at the hands of Babylonia, at the hands of Persia. So why are they still suffering while all these other nations sit in peace? And this, in the end of Perek Aleph, Hashem then reassured Zechariah that this is temporary, and he tells the Malach, and as such, he tells Zechariah that he will exact judgment on all their nations for the oppression of Bnei Israel. Now, okay, so how are these two visions similar? The one that we began with, that's in our chapter 6, and the one of the horses, that was the chariots, and the one of the horses that came up in Perek Aleph. So first of all, right away we see, right, the first vision in Perek Aleph was of horses, and our vision now in Perek Vav is of groups of chariots, of groups of horses. Both times they mentioned they were different colors. They have colors almost of different parts of flame, of fire. They all, both visions have horses going in different directions. And in both visions, it's Hashem who is sending the horses in different directions. They're representing somehow Hashem's power, Hashem's ability going through the land. But what then is, what's happening and what's different? So in Pasuk Zion, of our chapter of Perek Vav, I read so far just the first six, but in Pasuk Zion, it says, Vayiza Eikoti. So then like I was, called to me, yelled at me, like targeted me, like, come on. Vaydaber alai lemor, and said to me, so here's the message for Zechariah, Re'e hayotzim el eretz tzafon, see the ones of these chariots that are going to the north. Heinichu et ruchi be'eretz tzafon. They've given me some nechama, they've given me some peace by going to the northern region. Okay, so Radak explains that what's going on in the north and why are the chariots that are going out into the north giving some kind of peace to Hashem? So the Radak says that these ones, the black horses and perhaps the other group that went out to the north is where Babylonia came from. And ultimately, by the way, Persia conquered Babylonia. So that's like the kind of the seat of power. And they went out. Why were they going to Babylonia? To destroy it. And Hashem says, therefore, that Asuli Nachat Ruach, they gave me a little bit of calm. When they destroyed Babylonia, so they calmed down my anger that I had, since they were cruel to Israel more than they deserved, meaning there was a role of Babylonia and then ultimately Persia taking over and displacing Bnei Israel because of their actions, but they went too far. And then, Kemoshen Amar, Radak goes back to Perek Aleph, and he says, these chariots, what are they doing? They're going to punish all the other foreign nations who have caused all the suffering of Bnei Israel. And he says, why are they doing that? Kemoshen Amar, just like I said, in Perek Aleph, in the vision of the horses, when Hashem reassured the Malach, and he said, I know right now the world looks tranquil, ani katzafti ma'at, I was angry just a little bit, Hema Azrila Ra'ah, but they did evil. So I promise you, to the angel and then subsequently to Zechariah and to the people, I promise you that I will avenge what happened to Bnei Israel. So now that was the promise in Perek Aleph when the horses went out, but those horses weren't active. They were just reporting. But now these chariots, they're not just spectators. They're chariots of war, and they're actually going to execute that punishment and judgment on those nations. So here Zechariah is being told through this vision of the horses, I haven't forgotten you, Bnei Israel, and I will exact vengeance on the other nation. So this vision then, the seventh vision, is the continuation of the vision of Perek Aleph. It's actually the actualization of Hashem's promise. So this closes the circle of all of Zechariah's esoteric night visions. And I think we've seen throughout that there's a theme of comfort. There's a theme of vengeance on the other nations that have oppressed Bnei Israel. And there's a theme of rebuilding the leaders, rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash, rebuilding Jerusalem. I'll just say in brief that Rav Yoel ben Nun has a very interesting idea here, which is that he suggests there are seven visions. The central vision, right, the one in the middle, is the vision of the menorah, the vision of the rehabilitation of the two leaders, Yoshua, the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, and Zerubbabel, who's the governor, who's the political leader. And that's the central vision where the two of them are represented by the olive branches that are giving oil to the menorah. And he says, actually, there's three visions that come before it, three visions that come after it. Each of those visions are connected. The earlier visions are connected to the later visions. Like we just saw, vision number one is connected to vision number seven, two is connected to six, three is connected to five, and then there's the middle vision, the vision of the menorah. And he says these visions actually visually represent a menorah. And the menorah is the menorah actually is the vision, kind of the symbol of Bayit Sheni, of the second temple, because it wasn't as miraculous. It's something that needed to be lit. It wasn't only like divinely powered. It had the divine, you know, support, but the execution, the action all had to come from the people and from the leaders. And I think that's also parallel. We've mentioned this, I think, when we did chapter 4, that's why it's so fitting that this is the vision, this is the symbol of the state of Israel today. So we move now out of these night visions, and now we go to the second half of this chapter. And here, Zechariah is doing a symbolic act. It's almost more similar to the type of things that we saw in Yechezkel, although the truth is Yechezkel also had visions. Okay, Pasuk Tet. Vayihi devar Hashem elei lemor. So Zechariah is speaking in first person. We don't have the Malach anymore intervening. Hashem says to Zechariah, Pasuk Yod, Lakoach me'et ha-gola, mi'chet lai, u'me'et tuvia, u'me'et yedaya, Ubata Tabayomahu, Ubata Beit Yoshia ben Sefania, Asher Baumi Bavel. Okay, very interesting. Zechariah is told there are three messengers, Cheldai, Tuvia, Yedaya. They've come from Babylonia, and they're right now in the house of Yoshia ben Sefania, and they've brought a donation from Bavel. So he tells Zechariah, go take that donation that they've sent to Israel for the Beit HaMikdash, as we'll see. Go get that donation. Now it seems like, it's interesting, this is the Abarbanel's commentary said that maybe we can relate to this. Maybe people were hesitant, the people of Israel were hesitant to take the donation from the people of Bavel, right? There was a certain resentment from the people who stayed in the diaspora. The people in Israel are struggling. They're trying their hardest to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. Conditions are difficult. And all of a sudden come the people from Babylonia with their donation. The people said, we don't want your donation. So comes Hashem, and Hashem says, no. Everyone is responsible for the building of Israel, and donations from the diaspora are welcome. So he tells Zechariah, go get the donation. Now, what should he do with it? Pasuk Yud Aleph. V'lakachta kesef izahav. Okay, take the silver and the gold. V'asita atarot. Okay, so most of the Mefarshim understand that he was meant to make two crowns. Okay, v'samta barosh Yoshua ben Yehotzadak ha-Kohen Gadol. So where does the crown go? The crown goes on the head of Yoshua ben Yehotzadak, who is the Kohen Gadol. We've spoken a lot about the importance of the role of Yoshua. Okay, but we know that he was meant to make two crowns. So what happened to the second crown? And the text doesn't actually tell us where the second crown goes. So much, though, that some of the Parshanim said, no, it must be that Yoshua had two crowns. Now, it continues, though. I'll read now, let's read Yud Bet and Yud Gimel, 12, verse 12 and 12, 13. The next two psukim say this. Va'amarta alav, so Zechariah should say to Yoshua, the Kohen Gadol, lemor, ko amar shem tzvakot, lemor, this is what Hashem said, hinei ish, Tzemach Shemo, there will be a person, and his name will be Tzemach, like a branch, but a flowering branch, like a branch that is still developing. Umitachtav Yitzmach, okay, and from him will come more Tzemach, like more blossoming, more branches. Ubana Etechal Hashem, and he will build, this person named Tzemach will build the Heichal Hashem, the Beit HaMikdash. V'hu yivne teichal Hashem, again, he will build the house of God. Hu yisa hod, he will assume majesty, sounds like kingship. V'yashav u'mashal al kiso, he will sit and rule from his seat, his throne. V'haya kohen al kiso, I'm going to translate this according to Radak, that the Kohen will be coming to his throne, the throne of the king, meaning the Kohen in the ideal relationship, right, which you saw, sometimes in Sefer Melachim, in the ideal relationship, the Kohen was coming, was like the main advisor, I'm sorry, of the, yeah, the Kohen and the Navi were the religious branches for the king, and the king was meant to execute their vision. So the Kohen will be standing before the throne because that's the two, the political and the religious arm being connected. Va'atzat shalom tia bein shnehem, and there will be peace between the two of them. So he gives a crown to Yoshua, and then he speaks to him about this person named Tzemach who will be the king. So who is this person named Tzemach, and what are we talking about? So many of the Parshanim assume that Tzemach must be Zerubbabel, right? It's talking about the political leader named Zerubbabel. Now, first of all, we saw, if you remember, back in Perek Gimel, Zerubbabel is referred to as Tzemach. And in general, Tzemach, this idea of the flowering branch, is very often the metaphor that's used for the Davidic dynasty. So here, right, Rashi and Radak say it's obvious one of the crowns went to Yoshua, and clearly the second crown went to Zerubbabel, who's referred to as Tzemach. So Yoshua maybe has to put the crown on Zerubbabel's head. Others, though, say that since Zerubbabel is not mentioned explicitly, we only talk about Tzemach, and it doesn't say that the crown will actually go on his head. So Metzudat David, for example, and Malbim say, no, it's not meant to go to Zerubbabel, because Zerubbabel didn't actually end up flowering to this point where he was the king and he would really deserve to wear the crown, right? The ideal would be that it would be given to the political leader. But it's only if the political leader actually became a king, and Zerubbabel never took that role and he never flowered to that point where he deserved to wear the crown. Actually, in the commentary of the Dat Mikra, Mordechai Zirkavod says, he suggests that maybe even Zerubbabel had died, because otherwise, why wouldn't it mention Zerubbabel? So clearly, that second crown, according to this commentary, was not given to Zerubbabel. Instead, it was waiting for a future pending time. Rav Yoel ben Nun, who we also mentioned earlier, develops this idea really beautifully, that in general, this idea of tzemach, this blossoming branch, is always the metaphor for the ideal Davidic king. It's used throughout Tanakh, but it doesn't come to fruition. So, for example, it was used by Yeshayahu about Chizkiyahu in Yeshayahu chapter 11, but it never actually happened. And here also, it was intended to be for Zerubbabel, but only if Zerubbabel actually was able to flower into this type of Davidic king, which would only be if the people merited it. And therefore, this kind of never came to fruition, almost like how in many generations, Yoshiyahu, Chizkiyahu, we always have these potential Davidic kings who don't actually flower into what they're meant to be. And it continues in Pasuk Yudalid. So what ultimately ended up happening to these crowns, the Ha'atarot, whether it was given to Zerubbabel, or Zerubbabel died, or he never earned it. In Pasuk Yudalid, Va'atarot ended up to Yelechelem Ulituvia Ulidaya Lechein Ben Tzifanya Lezikaron Beheichal Hashem. So these Atarot, these crowns, ultimately ended up as a remembrance in the Heichal of Hashem, in the Beit HaMikdash. And by the way, it's a remembrance here. The names are slightly different, but to the people from Babylonia who donated them. So we can almost imagine this like it's like a modern day plaque, you know, where there's people from the diaspora, almost like when you go to Pantry Packers and you see like those plaques with people who gave a donation for a bar and bat mitzvah. So here there's a plaque to these people from Babel who still cared about the Mikdash, even though they weren't living there. So they ended up becoming a zikaron, a remembrance. And the parak finishes, urichokim yavou ubanue chalashem. And ultimately, those from far could be referring to those in the diaspora, Jews in the diaspora, could be referring to other nations who are coming back to serve Hashem. Maybe it's both. But Rechokim Yavou Ubanu Heichal Hashem, they'll build the Heichal Hashem. V'yadatem ki Hashem tzvakot shelachani aleichem. And then you'll know that Hashem sent me to you. V'haya im shamo tishma'un b'kol Hashem elokeichem. And all this will happen conditionally if you listen to the voice of Hashem, your God. So just to sum up this piece, we had a gift given from the diaspora, from the Babylonian Jews, sent to Israel. Zechariah is encouraged, take it. This gift is built into a crown, one for Yoshua, one either for Zerubbabel that was given to him, or one that was made for a Davidic leader who would be able to really fully blossom and hold that role. Neither this vision wasn't actualized at that time. They became symbols in the Beit HaMikdash, and like many of these nevuot pending for the future when one day the political and the religious leadership of Israel will be united. And actually, I'm just saying, this is what we daven for really every day in the Shemona Esrei when we say Etzemach David Avdecha Mehira Tatzmiach. We use that word. We ask for the branch of David to flower. Because we hope for Hashem's Yeshua all the time and every day. And then we bless Hashem and we say, what does Hashem do? Hashem is Matzmiach Karen Yeshua. Hashem causes the flowering and the growing of the horn of salvation. Thank you for studying together. Le'iloi Nishmat Gilbert Carcenti Menachem Mendel Ben Saud.